Welcome to Polycast, a civilization podcast focused on game strategy.
Dan Q.
Makalua.
The Mean Team.
Ed Jin.
With guest co-hosts.
King Morgan.
Warning you too.
Are there any new affinity resources?
I think you mean strategic resources?
Maybe. I don't know.
Welcome to episode 231, and we've got our host today, Dan Quick.
Summer Sizzle.
We got the lovely Makalua.
Barbecue time, yes.
Of course, we got our indomitable Mean Team, Phil.
We're still so good, and mostly legal.
And welcome to Warning You Too.
Game on.
And of course, myself, King Morgan.
Episode 230 feedback here. Like Dan mentioned about the show notes before we started, it's a little bit on the long side. The majority of my contribution to this was just pointing out that the term itself, exploit, and arguments over definition in general are not very fruitful unless you can come to an agreement on the definition. And that rarely happens in forum arguments, and without it, there's no meaningful distinction between that and just saying a nonsense word, unfortunately.
Between the two threads, both of these on Civilization Fanatic Center, one in the Civ 5 General Discussion Forum and the other in the News Forum, both getting more than 600 views as of this recording. Phil's comments were more on the content, since it was he and Mad Jin that were involved in the particular discussion of the use of the word exploit, and Mad Jin is not on this episode, so I asked Phil to speak to that kind of in summary. And I took on more of the approach to the conversation, because I know Mackie and myself and our guest really weren't as involved in that particular conversation. But what started it was from Horseshoe Hermie, which was, exploit is not a pejorative term. The Polycast team doesn't need to have a knee-jerk reaction just to someone using that word. The casters called the bias of the post irrational, but attacked a straw man. But it's not their radical error. They single out a guy who plunges into the sick of C++, comes out and describes honestly what he sees, and he gets bashed. It's upsetting. Polycast wants to be a visiting place for the typical civer, but doesn't try to empathize with one's actual viewpoint. These goals are not mutually satisfying. And I was like, whoa.
Yeah, I feel like that's a little bit over the top relative to what we actually said on the show. Now, I don't remember word for word like our transcript from episode 230, so maybe I said something I shouldn't. I don't think that merits this response. We did come down on the word mostly because it's being used in a context where at least a good portion of the forum thinks that some of the actions are shady, and it's also being used in the same paragraph in a context that would mean that playing the game at all is. To Matt and I, I guess I'm speaking for Matt a little bit here, but that seems somewhat nonsensical because you need something else there. It doesn't make sense.
Yeah, I mean, my definition of exploit is something that's broken within the game that the devs really need to come and fix in the next update. Anything else is just cheesy tactics.
Yeah, but some people will put cheesy tactics in their definition. What I concluded later on in the thread is that you need something that will differentiate it from anything else, and that actually gets you to change your actions regarding those versus something else for the term to be useful. But it's true that Delnar actually did provide quite a bit of useful data in terms of the AI. Like, I did not know all of its limitations with regard to move and shoot, for example, where it will not move towards something in the fog and then fire on you. That's, if anything, that just makes me more capable of abusing its inadequacies. But I do appreciate it.
Well, AI needs so much improvement because it's on every game, not just Civ. I mean, it's very difficult for it to play to a human level. It's either pretty weak or annoyingly too good.
Yeah, unless you just make it a game of how quickly you can react to something, AI is not going to be able to keep up with a human. And that's part right, of that is computing time, honestly. I don't know if you want 7-hour turn times. It would certainly improve the AI. Don't know how much, but it would improve it. And part of that's just the marginal increase you get in how quote-unquote good an AI is versus the amount of time the developers spend on it. And there are some realistic limitations there.
There is a balance, yes.
Yeah, and to a degree that also impacts your design. not of the AI, but of the game and the game's rules. If you intend for the game to have a heavy single-player component or a multiplayer component where the AI is still a big factor, then some of your mechanics that you put in the first place, if they're not workable in the context of an AI, then they probably shouldn't be used. And I think that's something a lot of developers lose sight of, and it really cost for Axis early in Civ 5. The AI was not on a level to handle the changes.
That's very true.
It got much better over time, but yeah, you're right. There's a balance on how much time you put into making the AI strong, and there's also a balance in terms of how you design your mechanics such that an AI can handle them, or if you just abandon that and AI entirely and make it only multiplayer. Those are not necessarily easy choices for a development team.
No, you definitely need a game with a strong single-player content. Otherwise, you have to just go sort of like the Doha 2 route and be completely multiplayer.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, but you can do that. You can make a Dota 2 or a Counter-Strike or whatever, if that's what you're going for. And in that case, it doesn't make much sense to put a lot of time into the AI, because what you're trying to do is make your multiplayer experience as good as possible.
Yes,
they make
definitely.
Bots, but they don't make like great bots. And I would argue that it's not too important, because mostly when you see people playing against those bots, it's people who are learning.
Yeah.
Horseshoe's comment about us bashing Delnar. I said, with respect, I disagree that Delnar was bashed. A position was taken that countered his view, and that counter was articulated. I can understand someone not favoring the pointedness of the articulation at times, though again, it was an argument that was being challenged, not of the author themselves. If the degree of that pointedness came across so as to cause offense, no, that was not the intention. And in fact, Delnar said, "You need not protect me, Horseshoe. I was not offended by their approach to quote-unquote exploits, though I do suppose I would have preferred they discuss another post, seeing as there's not much they really added that is not already said in the thread." And my response to that was twofold. First off, I said, "I'm glad that you didn't feel offended." But moreover, I said, "Often points that are made on our show on topics attached to forum threads are those that have already come up in the thread. And when they do, we try to articulate them, we try to expand on them to, you know, minimize, if not outright remove, assumptions, because a listener's familiarity with the topic may just be what we're saying. They may already have experience with it. They may not go and read the forum thread. So to say we're not going to bring up what's already in the forum thread that we feel is relevant, because sometimes threads do go off topic, not to say that we don't. But in this case, I said the conversation in question was a response to a post of yours, Delnar, rather than a separate thread itself. So if the discussion had been more specific and extensive to your post, more would surely have been explored, because what this was, in response to a thread about higher level difficulty play in Civ 5, where people were going over some interesting statistics about the game's players, and Delnar's comment about exploits had come up as a reason why a lot of people do not want to play on the higher difficulty levels, in particular Immortal and Deity. Phil, you continued on the conversation, and it's kind of one of those cases where, in addition to not wanting to monologue, we encourage people to look at this thread. Not that we don't encourage people to read the threads that we discuss on the show,
yeah.
But there is a lot of information here, and sometimes this kind of conversation works better in a printed format as opposed to a verbal format. Though I will briefly jump to the second thread, which was the news topic. Legalize Freedom had said, "Enjoyed the show as always. However, the Beyond Earth negativity is wearing on me. I'd be the first to admit the game's flaws, but in my opinion, it's still a great game, and obviously will get better as mechanics and content are added. I see far too much forum think as it is, and enjoy Polycast to get some rational arguments for and against strategies, mechanics, etc. Now I hear the game being insulted on this show, and I can't see how that adds to the discussion. The guest, developer, seemed to be trying to bring the conversation around, and his input was a nice break, albeit a bit too positive times. I'm not suggesting a sugar-coated show, but insults are too much, and I can count on Phil for a rational response." Which, that found a nice place in Phil's heart.
Yes, I appreciate that.
Legalized Freedom had concluded by saying, "Thanks for the effort of producing this show." So while I obviously took some disagreement with what he said, it was expressed constructively. Not to say that Delnar was not doing that in the previous thread, or even Horseshoe, but had a little bit more edge, perhaps. I had said in response to Legalized Freedom's are being really negative about it and insulting the game. See, the big word from Horseshoe was that we were bashing Delnar, and now from Legalized Freedom, it's that we were insulting Beyond Earth. And my response to that was, "In the past, we as a regular panel and a number of guests have discussed our concerns about Civilization Beyond Earth, which included mechanics, strategies, and the like. Here, concerns were raised about what we know about the Rising Tide expansion pack, and that was the focus, but so too were hopes and wonderings. They tie back to parts of what we said in the past about Beyond Earth, and areas of concern tend to get more discussion points than hopes or even wonderings. And yes, this was about a separate topic on the last episode, which was about the announcement of the Rising Tide expansion for Civilization Beyond Earth, or Civbert. I said that just for some people that don't like
Civbert.
That. I could not resist.
I like it.
And of course, the next statement has to be Civ Ernie will be the second expansion factor for Beyond Earth. I called that weeks ago.
Yeah.
That said, the segment of the show you're referring to, and this is again to legalize freedom, it was a continuation for and included on episode 229 of the show. So we had a balance of conversation about Rising Tide that spread across the two episodes as opposed to one. And I said to legalize freedom, without a doubt, there was more concern as opposed to hope or wonderings in the portion that was included on episode 230. So I mentioned before the show that after episode 229, and we talked about this on episode 230, which was essentially, where's the teeth? Where is the criticism and concern about what we know about Rising Tide? And it's like, well, you know, we had Derek Paxton, Galactic Civilizations 3 developer, on the show. And so in editing, I prioritized that for the hour's worth. But I said that, you know, we would include the second part in the subsequent episode. And given timing and more information about Rising Tide coming about through E3, I decided there needed to be a pretty quick turnaround so that we would have that balance from one episode to the other. And now, of course, we get a response. You guys are awfully negative about this. Where's the balance?
Yeah.
So I here said, I can understand someone not favoring the pointedness of our articulation at times about Beyond Earth. I said, though personally, I don't believe any insults were dealt. But if that degree of pointedness came across as insulting, again, that was not the intention. And I thanked him for listening and for the feedback that he provided. And although I didn't include this in either of the threads, swear alert, if people did not give a shit about what we were saying, then they wouldn't bother to respond.
Good point.
And yes, it's true that we're more likely to get negative feedback just because of the emotions that are often tied to that. People are more likely to complain than they are to compliment. But at the same time, if it was just, well, they're just rehashing the same thing over and over, I've already done that on the forums. I've already seen that on the forums. They're not really adding anything to the conversation. We don't care about the show or what's being said on the show. Then they wouldn't respond. And so the fact that a number of people took the time to express their concerns, and then between my response and Phil's response, extending that conversation beyond what was covered on the show, that's what we really like to see, is the audience interaction. It gives us a sense of what our audience thinks we're doing right, maybe not doing so right, but it also gives us a chance to extend on what we may or may not have said on the episode. And we would rather people call us out constructively rather than just mumble, grumble, mumble, and not listen to the show anymore.
Absolutely.
Because that's the point, is to not just reflect dialogue, but also to extend it.
I do wish we had Majin around, though, because like, he's the one that came down the hardest on it. I think we have some degree of consensus on the panel that there are certain things in the game that need work. But as someone who spent a lot of time in Civ 4 and then felt a little bit roughed up by the attempted transition to Civ 5 because a lot of its subsystems were either not developed or didn't work, I can see where he's coming from, certainly.
Legalized Freedom had further said, "What I mean by insult is implying the game is dead or is not a good game. That may be some folks' opinion, but I have come to expect optimism alongside the understandable cynicism from Polycast. I generally find Polycast to be above that kind of name-calling. Can't we go every other place on the internet to find that?" That was my observation. I first thought, interesting characterization of the show, although not the first time we have heard that. Appreciated the clarification, I said. All of us on the panel spoke of or to disappointment with Civilization Beyond Earth between this, so between episodes 229 and episodes 230. Not all of the panelists came to the conclusion that Beyond Earth is dead or not a good game as a result of that disappointment, though. And then I said, speaking for myself at least, I know I came across as having hope for the Rising Tide expansion to address parts of Beyond Earth's falterings, while also looking to temper some of the pre-expansion release criticism within the Civ community. Ultimately, if we thought it was a dead or not a good game, given what we'd already said about Beyond Earth, if we didn't feel there was something about Rising Tide beyond the fact that it was announced, and then we move on to another topic, we still wouldn't be talking about this game.
Well, I'll quite happily fill Majin's shoes. Firaxis are going to be very lucky if they think I'm paying more money for Beyond Earth. I wish them absolutely the best of luck, and I hope it's fantastic, but yeah,
and, you know,
I'm not.
I do hope that it's going to be like we had with Civ 5, where as the expansions came out, things got better in the game. It's just I played it for a few months, and I got frustrated with it, and it, for me at least, it seemed repetitive, and it's not that there's not the bones of a good game there. That's never what we're saying.
I was so excited.
It's got Civ 5's engine. And also, one of the things lost in Civ 5 is it isn't just the new features such as Rising Tide for Beyond Earth or Gods and Kings in Brave New World for Civ 5 that made Civ 5 play better. The patches, and the devil's in the detail of the patches, because you can go the wrong way with this. Europa Universalis has gone the wrong way with this a few times. But those patch changes, even if they're subtle, add up. And sometimes they're not so subtle impacts on gameplay. It's something you don't think about now, but when you had the quote-unquote flanking bonus in vanilla, and you could stack that up to like plus 50% combat strength, how that trivialized the units, the unit strength, unless you were like eras in front. It's easy to forget that that was ever a part of the game now, because it's been so long since that has been a part of the game. But that was a patch note change. That didn't change just because of an expansion release. And there's a lot of things like that over time that gradually made Civ 5 play a little better. And certainly some people still don't like one unit per tile. Some people still don't like the four cities. It's reasonable if you don't like those things. Fine. But regardless, the patches themselves changed a lot, and what we see in Rising Tide is not necessarily what's going to make the game much better, much worse when it comes time to play it. And I'm not saying that it's guaranteed going to get better either. I mean, games can be damaged quite a bit by changes in their patches that attempt to fix one thing and make things worse.
Well, they're being quite forward-thinking, aren't they? I mean, they're putting the water game in with, obviously, hence the name Rising Tide. And if you watch the videos that have come out, all the keywords I'm hearing are artwork, leaders. I'm not hearing gameplay. I'm not hearing balance.
That's not unusual, though, because let's be honest, when you look at any game and they're talking about it, how much they talk about specific balance changes or specific aspects of gameplay, they'll talk about how good the gameplay is, or maybe say, you know, it's turn-based and this or that, but it's pretty rare to see pre-discussions, unless you're like in a League of Legends forum on a Riot post or something, to see actual discussion about specific balance points and what the reasoning behind it is.
Yeah, what they're talking about right now with Rising Tide are they want talking points for general gaming media.
Yeah.
And that's also selling points, right? It's also marketing. What we're interested in, those kind of nuts and bolts, that'll come up more through forum discussions, screenshot dissections. And once the game is actually released, I'm certain that there will be conversations from Firaxis and 2K or, you know, looking for questions from members of the community to get into a little bit more of the nitty-gritty.
We have a bunch of Rising Tide video things.
Yes.
Civilization expansions in the past have kind of targeted specific parts of the game, either the middle game or the late game. If you look back at Gods and Kings and Brave New World for Civ 5, this expansion really covers the entire scope of the game. So it really does change the way that you play this game in pretty fundamental ways. So if you are very comfortable with Beyond Earth, you know Beyond Earth, this is really going to change everything.
The first video on YouTube from BA Start Gaming, it was with Will Miller and David McDonough, who return as the co-lead designers for Civilization Beyond Earth Rising Tide. And yes, they were the co-lead designers on Civilization Beyond Earth. Will is saying,
"We're extremely happy with how Beyond Earth came out and how it was received by our fans."
Which set of fans? Okay.
I think the biggest takeaway from that is that our fans wanted us to go farther, you know, go bigger. And Rising Tide is that for us. It's our commitment to sort of progressing this franchise, really taking it to the next level.
Well, okay then.
David McDonough said,
"Land is definitely not getting downplayed in the expansion. You'll have lots of cool things to do."
One of the things that the interviewer asked was, "So is it just about water and taking the land mechanics and adapting them to the water gameplay? Is land just being ignored?" So that was David's response to that. And then, of course, diplomacy came up.
So new diplomacy is about kind of two big things. One is bringing the characters to life, making their flavor, their personality very broad, very powerful, very clear.
I stopped there for a moment and I went, okay, they're very broad, they're powerful, but they're also clear.
Yeah, broad and clear is the juxtaposition I'm having a problem with.
Yep. But I thought, okay, Dave, okay, it's an enigma. It's an enigma like most Civ. Okay.
So you can predict them, you can appreciate who they are.
Broad, do we really want predictability? Maybe that's a bit strong word. Maybe we would like some...
Well, maybe he's referring to how we know if we run into Genghis, he's going to want to smash things. Or, you know, that France is going to try to go culture. That kind of a predictability.
And the other is, like, making diplomacy relevant to the whole game.
Well, that would be nice, yes.
Yes, relevant diplomacy has been a sore spot in Civ for a while.
Now, they would not provide any specifics on how gameplay changes will affect stations, but they indirectly acknowledge that, yes, it does affect stations in a substantial way, but they would not go into more detail that that was still to come. So I went, ah, that was on the list of things not to talk about.
Uh-huh.
And of course, this was all at E3 2015. 2015 and 2015, strange, occurred earlier this month. However, the second interview, IGN at E3, resulted in a number of people on Civilization Fanatics Center saying, quote unquote, mind blown.
Your cities float, and okay. The big deal with them is that they travel around the map. So they're actually sailing cities, and that's how you gain territory. It's how you claim new territory. You can even claim other people's territory this way. You can use your cities as floating fortresses along with a navy as an invasion force. Mm. You can win in a game of Civilization Beyond Earth without ever setting foot on land.
Wow. Your city's position on the map is fluid.
ow, painful.
Why am I thinking of that Kevin Costner movie, Waterworld?
Whoa, whoa, whoa. Let's hope Rising Tide does, quote-unquote, better at the box office.
True.
Yeah, it's true.
And there was also mention of artifacts, which had been mentioned briefly in the past, but I really didn't get any kind of details. And the more I hear about it, the more it makes me think about actually artifacts from Civilization Revolution, in some respects. But how it is described here in Rising Tide.
This is an extension of the quest system, which we introduced in Base BE, and it lets us award the player with objects that they find by doing expeditions, exploring the world, completing quests. And these objects can be traded in for a quick gain of yield, or they can be collected into sets and traded in for things like wonders or buildings that you could not have built otherwise.
Juxtaposed with the next sentence from Will, which is,
it's a simple system.
And I'm thinking, you can trade in for wonders or buildings that you could not have built otherwise. It's simple. Oh, just that, right? And I think it also has some, maybe a little bit of a comparison to also Greek people, like we see in Civilization V. You know, you could trade that in for that quick boost of science, or you could settle it for something that would extend over, you know, the course of the period of the game. And we've talked about before, depending upon the stage of the game, there's one decision that's better than the other. But I thought, oh, that's interesting. And then, tragically, even though I don't play Pokemon, I thought of Pokemon because I talked about collecting them into a set, and I thought, you got to collect them all. But I do come back to the floating cities thing. That sounds amazing.
Well, it sounds like a ship, doesn't it?
A little bit.
Yeah, I got a fleet of cruise ships. Don't mess with me.
Now, I do wonder, again, on details, can you move these city ships closer to each other than you can other cities? Can you have, like, six city ships all, adjacent to each other?
Yeah, exactly. Can you put them all in a big hexagonal thing and just call it Atlantis?
Oh, geez.
Oh, you want like what we could do in the original Civilization on land, where you just plonk city after plonk city beside each other?
Well, if you're able to move the city, then I would imagine that the rules regarding city spacing are a little more fluid in space.
Oh, God. It's catching.
Power of the pun compels you.
I used it slightly differently, so it's acceptable. Seriously, that will be an interesting dynamic, because if they leave the minimum city range, then you will have congestion in channels and stuff. You won't be able to take more than one city with you very easily, but if they don't, then you're going to have pretty weird city stackings. And I wonder, like, can an ocean city work land tiles? How do their borders work? That kind of stuff.
Well, I don't know. I know we're going to have aliens that can be both in the water and on land, and you can have combinations of cities on land and in the water. So who knows? Maybe if you got close enough to the shore that, as long as it wasn't being worked by another civ and not otherwise claimed by a civ, that you could be working that. You never know. It's an interesting idea.
All right. We'll have to experiment with this. I'll be a tool bag and roll up to Dan's coast and start working his tiles before I can buy them or border expand on them. I'll just be sitting there with my ocean city.
With regards to the second video that talked about these floating cities, I think a lot of people would have missed this because the audio, just as an aside, IGN, the audio is atrocious. It is so quiet that I had to take the audio and I converted it into an MP3 and then I loaded it in Audacity and I boosted the volume so I could hear what was being said, because if you cranked up your speakers to be able to listen to it, and then you went to listen to something else without changing it, you might never hear another thing again in your life. I do not expect that from IGN. It wasn't like Bob's videos. No offense to the Bobs of the world. It was sad. Speaking of audio issues, there was music that was playing constantly, even when the video went from game footage to just the interviewer and Will. So it was just Will Miller. And I had to laugh at the YouTube comment. Someone said that the audio that the audio was very annoying, made it very difficult what was being said, and it played like a bad porno. Speaking about the improvements to the diplomatic system from before.
You start off with one personality trait that your leader always has. It's the same. And this would be that leader's bonus that they would get. And base BE has been recontextualized as a trait in Beyond Earth, Rising Tide. And then you can add three more traits to your civ as the game progresses. And these traits can also be upgraded. So you can either upgrade the ones you have or you can add a new one. And this is transparent. So I can see personalities of the AI players in the game or other human players in the game, and I can kind of predict what they're going to do. You can trade the services of those traits to other players using a new resource called Diplomatic Capital, which you accumulate by sort of playing the diplomacy system. So if you have a trading-related trait, if you're the tycoon, you have the tycoon trait, I know that I can get trade-related benefits from you if I make agreements with capital. Yeah. So it's a way for you to exchange power between civs. It's, again, very powerful, but it's a simple system.
I love this mod. It's a simple system.
It's important to note that favors are no longer in the game. It's diplomatic capital. Favors were us sort of experimenting with this idea, the idea of making a resource out of diplomatic power.
Besides diplomatic capital being a better term, they probably also decided to remove the label flavors because of the negative connotation with it. This question just for Mackie was asked in this interview.
What a lot of the fans of the franchise are saying is that this is feeling much more like Office of Chill now. Like, is that kind of the point? Like, I know that was some of the criticism when the game launched. Like, why is this not just the game we wanted? And, you know, where was that, you know, is this kind of giving those fans the more Alpha Centauri experience they were hoping for?
Well, Miller, he kind of smiled and said,
fundamentally, Beyond Earth is not Alpha Centauri.
And I'm thinking, we know this.
Beyond Earth as a franchise is bigger than Alpha Centauri. It's
Whoa.
No. It takes up more space on your hard drive.
Okay, if you want to be literal about it, yes, but no.
I know you want to say, oh, no, he didn't. I know you want to say it.
I'm thinking it, but I was going to say, get a few expansions under your belt, and we'll discuss whether you're bigger than Alpha Centauri or not.
I mean, that's a good goal, though, because a lot of people were looking for essentially another Alpha Centauri. So if you can manage to make something better than that, ultimately, that would be great.
Yeah.
You know, we'll always have this historical Civ offering. I can guarantee that. That's our bread and butter.
Yeah.
But Beyond Earth is sort of the fork in the road where we get to try these new things and experiment with new gameplay. And if we tied ourselves to Alpha Centauri, we would be sort of more restricted than we wanted to be.
Yes, people were not looking for a...
Yeah, exact duplicate. If we wanted that, we could actually, you can still play the game in certain versions of things. But we want them to try new things. We want a cousin to Alpha Centauri, maybe.
Our philosophy on releasing a game is that they're live products. We release patches. We'll continue to patch the base game. We're going to patch the expansion, certainly, as it comes out and we see how people are playing it.
Will, I don't know why you're already talking about patching the expansion when it's not even released yet. Ixnay on that comment, nay.
Well,
because he's a
to.
Developer, always, and that's realism.
Yeah, you just develop it. But you do have to patch it before you release it. There are beta version patches and alpha version patches and whatever. It's typical progression.
They're on Steam, aren't they? They could always go early access with it, but I don't think they would. I don't think they'd tolerate that from a marketing point of view.
No,
probably what they should
do. They tend not to. Some games are a lot more open with that.
When this is being released or what the cost is going to be, I haven't heard.
Be released this fall, so it is sometime in 2015, and as for the price, you can pre-order it. The suggested retail price is $30. Of course, is leading to some people saying, I'm sorry, am I buying a completely new game? And some may argue with all the changes. Why, yes, you are. And yes, you do need Beyond Earth in order to run this expansion, which also confirms people saying, okay, so I need to get Beyond Earth plus Rising Tide. It would not be inconsistent pricing with this expansion pack for Beyond Earth with, say, Civilization 5 expansion packs. So the price did not surprise me. And if you really think it's a terrible price, Steam has these things called Steam sales.
Mm-hmm.
They recur frequently, and you just got to watch for it. If you must have it right now, regardless of the price, then you either pay for it or you bug, I mean ask somebody to buy it for you.
Yeah, I'm not prepared to reward the developers with a pre-order for this. I'm going to wait for the sales. I think it would put a lot of people off having to get Beyond Earth, as you say, and then they're doubling the cost of the game. I don't know. It's not the best way to do it, is it?
I wouldn't be adverse to paying that if the playability and on features, like what they're talking about, artwork and all that, it sounds to me, and I don't mean to bash BE or the new one, it sounds to me a little bit like fluff, but that's just me.
Yeah, I think it's definitely waits. Give it 4 weeks, see what all the forum people think about it, get a few Let's Play videos out, and if it looks good, then it's definitely something that I'd be interested in, because I was so excited when BE came out, watching Majin's playthroughs, it looked a fantastic game, and sadly it didn't deliver, and I really hope this expansion pack will.
Going back to the feedback thread a lot of what makes Beyond Earth kind of rough is that so many things, once you know them, you don't have to think any longer in Beyond Earth, so it becomes pattern reading. So if you have hundreds of hours, then it wears on you a little bit, because you're only making unique decisions a few times rather than a lot.
We haven't wrenched the wheel so far that it's a brand new game to learn. But what we want is for players to have to reevaluate their strategies. And that's why you buy new strategy games. You want to have that experience of strategizing and learning new ways to win.
It's interesting on the pricing aspect, though, because basically developers set the price to a degree, but so does the market. If it's priced at something people wouldn't buy it at, then it's not going to sell. And then the price tends to come down. But usually marketing's a little better at least ballparking their projection on what something should sell for.
Well, they shifted, 50, 60,000 copies of Beyond Earth when it came out? And
yeah.
2-3 weeks later it was on sale?
Very last one that's not a video interview, SA Gamer, a lot of information that essentially incorporated everything else that we had talked about that was spread across the other video interviews and added even more. Garth Holden interviewed Dave McDonough at E3, although this article was published on the 22nd of June, so it was, depending upon the video we're talking about here, 3, 4, or 5 days after all videos. Tech-wise, how far into the game will oceanic exploration open up? It's immediately. As soon as you have the technology research to build colonists, you can just drive them off under the shore, into the ocean, and found a city immediately. Or you can also set a game mode where everyone starts at the sea, and yes, 2 of the 4 new factions are completely aquatic, quote-unquote, that will planetfall at sea. And I know that was one of the things that we had asked and speculated, maybe even inferred an episode or two ago. You can get patrol boats right away, like you would get marines, and there is lots to unlock to make the city stronger. Okay. Now, here's the thing that does not come as a surprise. Will I be able to load up a previous save of game of mine in the expansion? No. There are just too many changes for things to be backported. There will be a substantial patch for the expansion to work with the base game, including bug fixes and balance changes. If you play your old save with that patch, your game will improve thanks to the changes, but to play it in the expansion unfortunately won't work. And this confirms the consistency that I know that both Majin and I have been talking about on previous episodes, that when Rising Tide is released, that there will be, in and around that time, a patch to go with the base game, so there will be some things that Rising Tide introduces or improves on that will then get back into the base game, but any changes to substantial mechanics or certainly new mechanics altogether, that just won't work because they're not going to backport what's in the expansion into the base game, because then otherwise, why bother having the expansion to purchase?
Wow.
Yeah. Well, I couldn't see with all the map changes they're making that trying to import a game into the new wing, it would kind of just choke on that.
Well, it wouldn't be the first time either that an expansion has affected the base game. But I got to admit that this ocean play thing kind of intrigues me.
Well, it's not something that we've had in Civ titles before.
No.
I mean, yes, you could say ocean cities, yeah, but the ability to move them around? No. That's kind of going from, hey, remember Alpha Centauri? Yeah, we don't want this just to be Alpha Centauri again. We're springboarding off of that, and look at what more we can do. So I think even more than the last episode, the more details that are coming out behind essentially the major bullet points, we're getting into some more of the specifics. And that just makes, I think, people want to learn more, and people who already wanted to play it, even more they want to play it. And maybe people that were on the fence are saying, oh, here is something that I can do in Beyond Earth Rising Tide that I can't do in another Civ title. Now, whether or not this turns out to be as good or maybe even better in practice as it looks on paper or on our computer screens, as the case may be, time will tell. But I think this definitely goes toward people who are saying, why isn't this just in the base game? Why isn't this just like $5 DLC? I think we are starting to more fully appreciate that this is expansion level worthy amount of content.
There's always this issue with modern games that you always feel like there was more stuff they wanted to put in, but they held it back for an expansion. I can't get away from that feeling sometimes.
I don't think so. I just don't think that they really properly went through it and decided. I think they were probably too optimistic to start with, and they found themselves struggling to meet the deadlines. And unfortunately, it wasn't right at the start. But give them a go at it, because they've certainly got enough experience now. So this expansion is something I'm looking forward to. But definitely opening up, it's going to be hard to balance. That's slightly worrying.
How do you move a city? I'm trying to grasp it. How do you move a city from on the ocean? Like, these have got massive great propellers or something?
It's basically a large floating city. It's, at least from the artwork we've seen, there's not domed cities underneath. It's floating cities on top.
Yeah, it kind of makes me think of Atlantis and Stargate Atlantis, except I'm pretty certain that the floating city will not be able to launch into space.
Oh,
that would be cool.
That would be sweet.
Coming in Civ Ernie.
Apparently you can domesticate siege worms?
Yes, the very last question. It is a harmony, affinity, unique ability, and you can domesticate smaller aliens relatively quickly.
I get my worms back, yes. I mean, what? Sorry, playing the Gaians may have been a little too much fun in Alpha Centauri.
Uh-oh.
I don't know if domesticate is quite the word based on the response, if that's completely accurate, because it's described as explorers are the units that do it, and it is a dangerous move that is hard to do. You have to go out and wait and hunt them and harness them. So I don't particularly think the siege worm is thinking, okay, I'm going to do this because now we're friends and you've shown me that you're nice. It's, I'm under your control and I'm going to have to do it just because. I could be parsing words, but...
We appreciate your destructive nature, but could you aim it over there?
Exactly.
And can you ride a siege worm? That would be
interesting. While it's being obstructed by coastal, so it's working as tile.
The artifact system, old Earth relics, which are things that were sent out long ago, they're biological artifacts, and then there are progenitor artifacts which come from the mysterious race that you contact in the contact victory. Hey, look at that. The artifacts are in different places. You will find old Earth artifacts and human settlements and biological artifacts and alien nests and so on. Depending upon which types of artifacts you put together, you will get different rewards similar to the sets in Risk. Ooh. And I just thinking, oh, please don't let it be so luck skill like Risk. But anyway, okay. Diplomacy. You could have a friendship of mutual benefit where your military friend will make all your military units fight better or build cheaper in exchange for your cultural traits to make his culture better.
Hmm.
Anything else on Rising Tide?
Not until we see more.
We're holding on.
I'll give you an opinion 4 weeks after the release date.
Yeah, there you go. Let's see how it works in action instead of just actually being told this, that, and the other. Because sometimes things will sound good on paper. Oh, that sounds like they work great. But then you actually get into game plan and you go, you know?
And now I'm thinking how you could troll us with that, Morgan. Oh, you're going to give us your opinion 4 weeks. All right, we come back to you after 4 weeks. So, Morgan, what's your opinion? I need more time to form an opinion. Oh, for crying out loud. You do it. I know you're going to do it now, and I gave you the idea.
Yeah,
you're
pull
welcome.
A Brett Favre and just delay it.
I will. I'll give you my opinion. Don't you worry about that.
And, this sounds more like a threat than a problem.
Now you're not saying what you're going to be giving the opinion on.
Opinions are like...
Yes.
All right. Flag, so. Flag.
Civilization Online entering final beta in July, coming from MMOsite.com. Korean company XL Games on June 24th announced the final closed beta of Civilization Online to start from the 14th to the 18th of July in Korea. Over 70,000 players will be selected to enter the upcoming test from the participants who apply for this closed beta on the official website. It is described as, luckily, all the second closed beta testers will automatically be invited to the final. And I'm thinking that just seems to be smart. I mean, I'm glad it's mentioned explicitly, but I thought if they hadn't said that, I would have just assumed, I guess I shouldn't assume, so I guess it's good that it's mentioned specifically. Then it's mentioned that Civilization Online is to launch in Korea soon after. And I'm thinking, okay, soon after, we've heard this before. I think it's been almost 2 years since we first heard about this game being in development. But then I started looking at news items below it, and we missed a couple of things, but it's fine to lump this all together. On the 7th of May, it was announced that there will be a Civilization Online server in Taiwan, the first overseas server, because it said that it would start in Korea and then expand outward to other markets in Asia and then maybe, just maybe, other parts of the world. Civilization Online is, of course, being developed by XL Games together with IP owner 2K Games. Says Game Flyer, who's going to be operating the server. So this is XL Games. I remember saying that they were going to look at other providers outside of Korea to manage servers for Civilization Online. So this is actually happening, it seems. Game Flyer is one of the biggest online game publishers in Taiwan and Blizzard's Taiwan partner. Okay, so it's making sense in a way why 2K first went to XL Games, because this isn't their first rodeo, as it were, when it comes to massively multiplayer online role-playing games. And last December, the Aztec civilization was added, which apparently is located on a new game continent away from the other three existing civilizations of Egypt, Rome, and China. There's some other details on there, including different types of unit class that comes up in the industrial era. But it was nice to see some news for Civilization Online, that it is progressing, and maybe it too is going to be released before the end of the year, like seemingly the Rising Tide expansion for Beyond Earth. So lots and lots and lots of news.
All Starship Unlockables for Beyond Earth by Rieka. Here we have a list of stuff that you can get for owning, what is it called? It's just Starships, right?
Yeah, Sid Meier's Starships, that's right. Yeah, by playing through, and it's detailed in the thread what you have to do in Starships in order to get this.
Yeah.
But it then unlocks mostly new setup options.
Yes, so you have some colonist options, pioneers, so you can build colonists and explorer units twice as fast. Mercenaries, all cities have plus 25 hit points, and all units have 10% strength and range strength in friendly territory. Under the spaceship category, supply module, begin with two resource pods near your first city, or electromagnetic sensor, or real artifacts on the map. And then you have cargo, cryotome, begin with a free virtue, or xeno management, which is begin with an ultrasonic emitter unit. And the way that works, it has one movement, and it does 10 damage to aliens in a 2-tile radius. There's also two maps available, Inland Sea and Tiny Islands. Rieka goes on to question whether or not that is a good choice for a game design to make unlockables that are only available through the purchase of another title. And it's a good point.
And there is, of course, the asterisks, and we're not going into details how you do this, but it is acknowledged that there are other indirect ways in order to get these unlockables.
Yes.
In terms of the unlockables themselves, and actually, as Rieka said, cryotome sounds insane. Begin with a free virtue.
Yeah, that's really strong.
Yeah.
Snowball. Yes, please. Big one.
I think compared to everything else, the cost savings of getting a free virtue, unless that raises the cost of all your future virtues, maybe. Because if it does that, then it's a little bit less attractive. If it doesn't do that, then that's like runaway top tier.
Yeah, in the absence of anything else, I kind of look at that as, for example, you advance to a new era as Poland in Civilization V and you get a free social policy that does not increase the cost of your next social policy, or the Mayan long count getting a great person not increasing, you know, the cost for the next great person. So
yeah.
I just view it in the absence of any other information that it's just free from the beginning. Boom.
Yeah, but like that makes Poland a top-tier nation in Civ V and one of the most widely regarded as such just because of that.
You're definitely going down the pay-to-win routes there because, as you say, it's such a massive advantage. Buy this game and get a free buff in BE.
I kind of smiled at myself where there might be some people that buy Starships, but they don't have Beyond Earth.
Yeah.
Hey, you unlock something. Go and buy it. Did I not give you enough money with this game? Nope. In terms of the unlockables, with the cargo, cryotome versus xeno management, I mean, the ultrasonic emitter, that's kind of neat, but there's just no contest there between those two. That's a knockout in like the first second.
Unless you're landing in a world where there's just like hundreds of aliens. Every single hex that isn't your city is just aliens everywhere. Free virtue is going to win.
So then spaceship, the supply module begins with two resource pods near your first city, or electromagnetic sensor reveal artifacts on the map. I'm sitting there and I'm thinking, although two resource pods near your city, that does sound like a very nice early boost. I can't help but say, okay, reveal artifacts on the map. You know exactly where to go. I think that's stronger.
Oh yeah, definitely. Because it's going to be, if you collect all the artifacts, you can unlock certain wonders. So yeah. If you're planning that type of game, slightly building, maybe less war, you'd take that immediately because, well, I would anyway, I'd have straight out for it.
As for colonists, the pioneers and the mercenaries, I think I would take pioneers as compared to the two, where you can build colonists and explorer units twice as fast. I mean, claiming territory, getting more explorers out more quickly. Again, back to that snowball effect. The additional hit points for the cities and all units, the increased range strength, even though it is quote-unquote only in friendly territory. Again, it's not bad, but it's just if I have to choose more times than not, I think pioneers is going to get you ahead.
Of course, don't forget that all of these are competing with your other starting options.
Oh yeah, that's very true. So now if we extend it to that, sticking with colonists, between scientists, refugees, aristocrats, engineers, artists, I still think, well, I don't know.
Yeah, see.
Now that's better. I mean, just as compared to the two, it's...
Yeah, pioneers is better than mercenaries, I would say, in the majority of cases. If you're really afraid of someone rushing you, I guess, but they're not going to have an advantage on you, at least, even if you don't go that. And I don't know, maybe in like a 1v1 or something, if you want a turtle, but it's hard to picture.
Thing is, the other options for colonists getting more science or food or energy production, culture, health in a city, that includes your capital right away. You still have to construct the colonist. You still have to construct the explorer and send them out. You could still be beaten to it or squished. So I don't think right away I would say pioneer is better than anything else that you could get for colonist, but it's definitely not to be sneezed at or something to be dismissed. I don't think on the whole that it's stronger and that I would prefer it over what is already available for colonists. Whereas if I compare, say, the other availability for cargo.
Yeah.
I just, why are the rest of you on this list?
Yeah, that's just a little strong. Just a little.
And as for spacecraft, okay, reveal artifacts on the map versus everything else. I know Ryaka had said, supply module sounds awesome, but I don't think it can rival tectonic scanner. Okay, supply module is the two resource pods. No, I don't think that can rival tectonic scanner, which, of course, no technology is needed to see petroleum, geothermal, and titanium resources. But between a tectonic scanner and electromagnetic sensor, give me the electromagnetic sensor.
Mm-hmm.
I can go through the tech web and I can reveal where those sources are. If I really want to push for that, then I can do that. And by the time I'm probably going to be settling for those resources, the time it takes me to get a colonist out there, worry about other factions on the map, aliens, etc., that I'll have a good idea where they are already. Whereas I can't go through the tech web and have it reveal artifacts on the map.
Now, if you were playing in an environment where a player could declare on you and kill your unit trying to harvest the artifact, would you change your mind?
I don't think so.
Interesting. Because if you know someone has that and you find their scouting units that are trying to get them, you can kind of pick them off.
The reward that you would get, being able to get those artifacts more quickly because you could beeline for them, and maybe have to go an indirect route perhaps because of aliens, but the resource that you would spend in constructing or even otherwise getting a unit to escort it, that would be worth the upfront cost.
Yes, but what I'm interested here is the marginal difference in what you get in artifacts without that versus with it. In other words, how close can you actually get to another player who's exploring normally before they just kill your stuff? Now, the AI will probably just moan at you right now, so you can get a few extra artifacts maybe. But even then, how many extra artifacts? What are we comparing? It is variable. It's not reliable. And if you're playing against other people, they would probably kill your stuff if you got too close. And you wouldn't be able to send enough units to protect trying to harvest an artifact like 20 hexes from yourself if they're 7 hexes from the artifact. There's just no way. At least not early game.
True. I think at the same time, if you reveal the artifacts on the map from the beginning, that there will be situations where you realize, man, a lot of the artifacts that are close to me are also close to other factions. And of course, if we're talking about multiplayer, then all bets are off. But if we're talking about single player and AI, if you're able to get to them and you said you know where they are, so it's just kind of like, oh, I just happened across this. It's really close to you. Let's go for that. Then if you realize this is where those are and they're really close, then perhaps it is actually worth, if you know how close that faction is and who they are, that you could go for the other artifacts that are not quite so close and be like, you know what, I'm going to go maybe towards those first if you're concerned about being attacked because they're farther away and they're less likely to be taken up by a faction through just exploring outright. And then in which case, yeah, it depends on the number. You might get luck screwed in that response, but I still think you're going to be more ahead than not, more often than not.
Yeah.
If you're putting all these resources and time and energy into doing all the artifact gathering, I mean, is that going to beat building a couple of settlers? I mean, early cities are far superior, in my view, to a couple of late-game wonders. Really depends what the investment is going to be.
The artifacts, if you had to collect the artifacts and then cash them in on a mid or later game, whatever we're describing, wonder or building, then that's a much bigger risk. But you could also just quote-unquote cash it in right away for an immediate benefit. So I look at it kind of like, okay, and I go back to the comparison, say, a great scientist in Civilization V. Like, early game, settle it so then you can work it. There's your snowball, because now you've gone from maybe 10 science right away, now you're working 8 more. So okay, so you've essentially doubled your science output. Or if it's later in the game, then okay, yeah, go ahead and cash that in. So because you could do one or the other with the artifacts, I think that, yeah, the snowball effect perhaps of the two resource pods, if we're comparing, you know, the other spaceship parts here, or having more cities out more quickly because you spent those resources on getting an explorer and getting someone to escort that explorer out there. It's true we don't know what those immediate benefits would be, but I think they would be comparable certainly to the snowball effect. And if nothing else, you deny your opponents those, even before potentially they realize that they were even there. Not to say that the land grab isn't important, but I just think that would fuel more towards everything else that you're trying to do.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully it would be an alternative strategy to settling and getting a couple of early cities. Any sort of different game style is always good. A variety of ways to get ahead and get that snowball. So yeah, it does sound very promising.
So other than Cryotome, which is, I think we're essentially agreeing as a panel here, what is there to talk about? It's just amazing, and why even consider anything else? The fact that there are valid arguments to say whether or not to go with an electromagnetic sensor as compared to other options that are available for Spaceship, or, you know, even with Pioneers. I don't have Starships. I don't have these unlockables. So I haven't even played with this yet. And already, right, we're having conversations about which is better.
Yep.
That is a good sign. That is a good sign, and is adding to some depth that is reasonably argued has been sorely lacking in Beyond Earth.
Just not like to see that come with a separate game.
Yeah, that's the big kicker.
And I think that's also going to limit how much people play with this, because they're not going to want to go through those measures to get to these. So I think for a lot of Beyond Earth players, they will never take these into account, because they either won't get Starships, and for one reason or another, they're not going to do the workaround in order to be able to get them. So yes, I think that does hurt the depth, because you get more people playing with these options more quickly, and that's how you start to develop, even after years and years, oh my gosh, look what I figured out after these X number of months of doing this.
Call in today. In North America, the number is 301-637-7659.
That's 301-637-POLY.
In Europe, 44-121-288-7659. That's 44-121-288-POLY.
The only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about.
For more information on Polycast,
our sibling shows Modcast, Revcast, and Turncast,
or about Polycast in general,
log on to the series' official website at thepolycast.net.
Austria, marrying the city-states, the city-state quests, and Venice, because, you know, they use Great Merchant of Venice in order to take city-states, or people also cite Siam, getting buddy-buddy with city-states. But when it comes to city-state stealers and holders, Greece, the other people are bad, don't get me wrong, but Greece is always and should always remain number one when it comes to the city-state front.
Got your Montes, your Alexes, your Shakas.
Like, yeah,
those are the people I want in the world. So if I see some jerkwad like Sejong or something, he needs to go. We need to get rid of these peacenik garbage civs and just make the world a proper place to live.
The Huns or Assyria? In terms of wiping them out, in terms of being target number one, especially the Huns, and maybe less so Assyria because that advantage with the siege tower. But quite honestly, if you can just keep them at bay in the early game, they lose their teeth.
Particularly Attila.
Yeah, but Shaka?
They have fun promotions for a very long time. And the Impi comes in right at a critical point.
And there's so many of them.
I'm glad you understand now, Dan, that Civ just isn't Civ without Shaka in it. He was a necessary and great component of Civ 5. See, I called it. They needed Shaka. They needed the Zulu.
Morgan.
Hello.
Talked about filling Majin's shoes. Are you like alluding to a coup? Are you trying to oust Majin?
I would never dare. I would never ever dare to even attempt it.
Fight it out.
You would never dare it, but you are thinking it. Thank you for confirming that. At least we know. Okay, we.
He dreams about it. He doesn't know that he can necessarily put a plan in action, however.
He has thrown the gauntlet down.
And you might be willing to let someone else act on your behalf. You're looking for like a pact of secrecy. Oh, wait, we don't have those anymore.
we have a declaration of friendship if need.
A faux friendship.
Yeah, like kind of like when you meet Montezuma, he's friendly.
Until you feel the knife in your back.
Well, if it's executed well, you might not feel it.
Episode 198, 13 months ago, Steve, that was your first
13
time.
Months?
Mm-hmm.
13 months.
Where the hell does time go?
I don't know.
Mackie and I are thinking, really?
Yeah, we know.
Mackie and I do not want to express in months how long we've been on this.
No. I don't want to do the math.
Except, you know, I'm doing math right now. I'm figuring it out.
I don't know if I'm good or bad at it.
I'm doing it, Mackie.
No, not math.
Oh my gosh, by the end of this year, it'll be over 100.
Ah.
Oh shit, it already is.
This has been the 31st release of Polycast. We've had Dan, Makalua, Mean Team, Phil, King Morgan, and myself warning you too.
I always thought that Civilization is complete with at least two add-ons, which
right.
makes the game whole.
Right.
And
That's been said a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. So this is the first add-on, right?
Yeah.
So another one is going to follow, and are you complete then?
I cannot say that.
Yeah, of course you cannot say that. I know. But, okay, so...
In the news...
Oops. Topics. I must find those.
I was about to say news, now brought to us by the only woman on the internet.
You earned that one, Mackie.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Now I lost my spot again because you're being funny.
I know you're here to tell me something about the add-on, and you worked hard on it, but I would like to open your mind for some crazy fantasy talk about Civilization, because I love this game so much. And I was wondering, when I knew that you guys were doing Sith in space, I thought that maybe you could like open the scale a little bit more, like not only be on a single planet and do a different environment, different lands, different animals, but always to enable the player to spread across the universe and to explore new planets. Do you guys plan on doing something like this?
I can't say that I can't confirm that or deny it. I can't say
it's so hard with you guys.
I know. We're well trained.
Yeah.
We have a bunch of Rising Tide video things.
Yes.
I mean, a lot of things. I don't know. I don't even know if Dan has had time to go through all of these, but they're...
I have indeed.
Oh, well, then you must have something you wanted to talk about. I don't know.
Nope. No, I'm kidding, yes.
Otherwise, you put it as a topic.
I'm going to go through all these videos, link all these videos, and I don't have anything I want to talk about with all these videos.
He'd do it. He would totally do it.
All right. From the only woman on the internet to the sexiest Canadian on the internet.
No.
Well, it was a good try. College try. It's okay.
Let's combine Civilization with Mass Effect. Okay, let's think it in.
I'm ready.
I think it's a brilliant idea. If you could combine it, like you have this universe full of those people, but you have to play it like a Civ game. From time to time, there's going to be a Reaper invasion, and then you have to think about new allies. You know what I mean?
I see what you're saying.
That
yeah.
was so brilliant. Can you get in a room with BioWare and make this game happen?
Yeah, why not? I honestly don't know. That does sound like a pretty cool game.
No, the computer virus people. You know, we need to get access to your computer. You never get those calls? Am I the only people that get these calls?
I'm going to guess you are. Maybe it's just a Canadian.
From India?
Like, if I don't recognize a phone number, I will very frequently not answer it. So yeah. Maybe I get them and I just ignore them.
That and if I want my ducks cleaned.
Your ducks. Mm.
And that is not a euphemism. So,
well, it might be, depending on context.
Oh, that was a horrible image I brought upon myself.
Someone is concerned that you guys are going to steal my idea. But this is okay for me. You can steal the idea because I'm not interested in money. I'm interested in the game. So
will you publicly disavow ownership of the idea?
Yes.
Okay, great.
But you have to do the idea. You have to really make it. That's, you know, that's my side of the bargain. So.
That's what you require.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Have you seen the latest season
finale?
No, I haven't.
No.
No, I mean, neither.
So we can't read this anymore.
Yes, but have you read the books?
Only the first one.
Only why? Did you stop?
I just haven't gotten to the others yet. I started really late.
Okay, but you've seen the series.
Yes.
Maybe I can have your number and then you can give me some pro tips.
I will.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll give you some immediate
or
advice.
You can...
What we tried to do in Beyond Earth was make characters more fluid.
But yes, the actual end of the show.
He does know that it's him, right?
Steve, what? Well, sure. You don't want the show to end. I understand.
Yeah, you're doing the closing. Now do the closing.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay, so.
No, coffee for you. Coffees are only for closers.
No. He needs more coffee to close properly.
This has been the 230 release of Polycast.
231st.
During 31st.
Record day, June 27th, 2015. Civilization Beyond Earth Rising Tide video interview clips, copyright BA Star Gaming, IGN, Lazy Gamer, and Rocket Beans TV. Civilization 4, 5, and Beyond Earth sound clips, copyright Take-Two Interactive. Copyright Civilized Communication at civcom.net.